Eddie.
Good morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barber Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you, whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. As Beth said, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly blog radio show. Beth, you've heard often, is our announcer, and Steve is our technical representative, and I'm the director. For those non-members out there listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America. That, of course, encompasses the Atlantic and Gulf Intracoastal Waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, as we call ourselves AGLCA, is an organization of people who share a sense of adventure and curiosity. Our association's primary purpose is to get you information and enhance the overall experience. Our website is www.greatloop.org. It's in the process of being redesigned, so visit often so you can see the new website. It'll be released in the next couple of weeks. We'd love for you to visit and become a member. If you decide for some reason not to become a member right now, there's loads of free information, and hopefully we'll entice you to join in the future. Our guest host this week is Dr. Jerry Reeves. Dr. Reeves was the former dean of the medical school of the University of South Carolina. Jerry, as he lets us call him, will be telling us about the importance of equipping your vessel with an AED and focusing on the aftercare of using the device. Jerry's primary research interests have included attempts to better understand the nature of the risks of cardiac surgery in elderly patients, with a focus on improving the outcomes of such surgery. As such, Dr. Reeves is uniquely qualified to lead this discussion. During the course of our show, if anyone would like to call in with a question or a comment, please feel free. We encourage you to participate. The toll-free number is 877-497-1815. Jerry, welcome, and thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Janice. You picked a kind of important topic, hopefully one that not too many people ever need to use, but sort of like a fire extinguisher, maybe.
What is an AED? Some people don't even know what it stands for.
Well, it stands for automated external defibrillator, and that immediately gets us into the topic of what is a defibrillator, and when do you need it, and why do you need it, and things like that. Probably it would be best to begin by a little quick review of how the cardiovascular system ideally and normally and usually works, and that is the heart fills during what we call diastole, and then it will contract, and that's the pulse you feel, and it'll send the blood around the body to the brain and all the other organs and to the heart itself. And so if that works normally, the usual heart rate is about 60 to 70 beats per minute, and anybody listening, any patient or any person can just put their index finger on their opposite wrist and right by the thumb, right below, back towards the wrist of the thumb, they'll feel that pulse, and that's the pulse that, and if it's perfectly regular, you'll feel it about, as I said, every 60 or 70 times a minute. You can also feel it by putting that same index finger up right underneath the chin, so-called in the area of the carotid artery, and you can feel it there. And it's important for all people to do this, but particularly people who think they're having an arrhythmia to monitor their own pulse. You don't need an EKG or a doctor. You can put your finger on your pulse. You can count it for a full minute. How many times did you feel it? And you can determine yourself whether it's perfectly regular or not. That means, does it have a rhythm that comes like a metronome constantly at the same rate all the time? So,
how often do you recommend we check our pulse, Jerry?
Well, you know, we do. I think it's important to, you know, what I tried to do when we were cruising is at least do my vital signs once a day, and usually the best time is in the morning when you get up, before you check your engine, before you do anything with the boat. I like to say check yourself and make sure you're okay before you go through the routines that we all have when we're doing the loop, which is, you know, eating and fixing our engine, checking our engine, monitoring it. You know, monitor yourself, count your heart rate. If you have a blood pressure cuff, which people with any kind of problems with the cardiovascular system should, take your blood pressure in the morning. If you have symptoms, normally, you know, the heart's very good at just doing its thing, and but if you have symptoms like feeling a fluttering in your chest, or if when you're taking your pulse you feel it irregular instead of regular, or if you pass out or have a fainting spell, these are indications that you do not have a normal rhythm. And that's, of course, when you go to a doctor. Nobody should purchase an AED, and we will get to AEDs, without having consulted with their physician about whether they need one or not. This is not one of those devices that, like I mentioned before, that the Coast Guard requires that it be on your boat, like fire extinguishers. You know, it's not a requirement, and there are a lot of people, in fact, I would say the majority of people, who do not need one, but there are some who potentially might benefit from having an AED, and we'll go over that in just a minute about, you know, how they work, what they do, and who should have them.
You should get your doctor's recommendation before you purchase one.
That's absolutely right. And I know that, and I went on their website, and I'm pleased that the Chesapeake, I don't remember, this Chesapeake something, that they sell them.
I was going to mention that. Chesapeake AED is the sponsor of America's Great Loop Cruisers. Their information is on our website. In fact, before we end the show, I will get their contact information. They are a very, very reliable vendor of AEDs. And go on, Jerry, and I'll get their information for our listeners.
I would say that I would agree with everything you said. It looked like a very reputable a vendor, as you call it, and they certainly have quality equipment for sale, and they also offer quite a bit of training on site, or they will come to a meeting if you have a sizable group, and they will demonstrate its use. All of that having been said, I would, like we should shouldn't just go out and buy one because they're for sale. You know, there are other ways to spend $1,000 up to $3,000 on a boat item, and they aren't for everyone. Well, maybe that should take us into how they work before we go into whether to get one or not.
Okay, before we go, I mean, I am just a total, total novice at this. Before they work, how do you know you need to get it? I mean, how do you know you need it?
Well,
what are the symptoms?
Let's look at some data, some statistics. You know, all of this is out there. 300,000 people die each year from cardiac arrest, and that's in fact 65% of all cardiac deaths, which is still the most common cause of death, particularly in the age group that are out there doing the Great Loop. Now, having said that, you know, which means we're all at risk for developing a cardiac problem, and the older we are, the more likely we are, and that sort of thing. But we wouldn't just buy something in anticipation of anything that can go wrong. There are suspicions that would put you in a group that's more likely to have the need for an AED, and that would be people with known arrhythmias, and we probably need to talk about types of arrhythmias, and we'll do that in a minute. But somebody who knows they have an arrhythmia, who's gone to their doctor and seen that they have one, then you're likely to continue to have arrhythmias, and if they're of a particular kind, meaning the two rhythms that kill people are ventricular tachycardia and ventricular fibrillation. Those, you know, they're two chambers of the heart, atrium and ventricle. There's a very common rhythm disturbance called atrial fibrillation that probably you know people who have it. There are lots of people on the loop that know they have atrial fibrillation. They're out there doing the loop. They're fine. They don't have and don't need AEDs because AEDs wouldn't help them convert anyway from their atrial fibrillation. So that's a rhythm disturbance, common. 8% of people, as they get older, will end up having atrial fibrillation. AEDs will not do anything for or against that rhythm, but it's the other chamber of the heart, the ventricle. If it goes into either ventricular tachycardia or ventricular fibrillation, that's what causes sudden death. That's what kills those 300,000 people per year. And that is, in fact, what AEDs are designed to keep from killing you, because what you do is you will apply it, and we'll talk about how to do all that. But it makes the diagnosis. It will go ahead and send the shock that will convert, change that lethal rhythm into a life sustaining sinus rhythm, and so it's people who are at risk for developing that kind of a arrhythmia that would probably be recommended by their doctors to have AEDs. Now, the American Heart Association has actually listed, and I'm looking for the listing here it is, of places that people encounter these sudden death episodes, and there's a ranking of where it happens, from the most common to the less common. And the most common place is airports. Next most common.
Really?
Yeah, and that's why you won't go to any airport these days without seeing AEDs approximately 1 minute apart from each other, which means if you collapsed, you in most airports, at least all busy airports, you're not more than a minute from the closest AED. And we'll talk about why that minute is important. But airports are number one. County jails are number two. Shopping malls, number three. Sports venues, you know, stadiums and that sort of thing, are next. Industrial sites, golf courses. And, you know, where you live and where we have a home at Seabrook Island, we have AEDs on the golf course for this very reason. Ferries, train terminals, health clubs, and senior citizen centers, those are the ranking places from top to bottom where these cardiac arrests occur.
So basically situations that can be tense or stressful or competitive.
Yes, or where there are older people, but they're generally under, most of these are having stress, airports being the best example.
Definitely. Jerry, we're going to break for a quick commercial, and then I'd like to get into what you do with the AED, what's the best way to make it effective. Steve,
all
right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Curtis Stokes & Associates is a yacht brokerage company that specializes in great loop capable boats. Curtis Stokes is a supporter of the AGLCA at the commander level. If you're looking to buy or sell a great loop veteran from a trusted and knowledgeable broker, visit the company on the web at curtisstokes.net, email Curtis at curtisstokes.net, or call anytime. 954-684-0218.
I just have to correct us there. That is an older commercial, obviously, we ran. Curtis Stokes is now a very valued Admiral sponsor, so we'll redo that commercial soon. Okay, Jerry, you're on a boat, and you're cruising.
I'm on a boat, let's say. I'm on a boat, and the question is, do I want to equip my boat with an AED? Isn't that really the question? The answer is it's multifaceted. And the first thing you have to decide about whether you want one or not is your risk of sudden death. Now, if you have a history of these two bad arrhythmias I've talked about, you don't want an AED. I mean, you may want an AED, but what your doctor will probably tell you is you need an internal cardioverter defibrillator, an ICD, which is an invasive device that is like a pacemaker that's put into your. If you have a history of ventricular fibrillation, ventricular tachycardia, they will implant that in you with your agreement, and that's there, and that will that's totally, once it's installed with the surgical procedure, it will keep you going and prevent will treat any of those arrhythmias that you have. So, you know, there's that people who know they're at high risk for fibrillation should already have an implantable one, and they don't. They may want as a backup an AED as well, but the internal should take care of it. But you need to have some idea about, if you're a young, healthy person, you don't need an AED. If you know you have ischemic heart disease or heart failure, then you fall into a group that is at risk for having a cardiac arrhythmia of this type, and you probably, after you and your doctor talk about it, should acquire one. But there's some other conditions. Your living arrangements. If you're alone, and I don't know anybody much doing the Great Loop that's alone, but the AED will do you zero good if you're alone, because you, the patient, you're unconscious, and so someone else has to use it, and someone else has to apply it to you for it to work, and so you, this is at least, this is a two-person deal, the patient and the crew member or the captain, who will have to know how to operate an AED. So if you're sailing alone, it's a waste of money because you'll never be able to use it. Your crew also has to be physically able to help you, meaning get in to kneel and do CPR as well as apply this and be trained in it. If you don't have someone capable of doing that, again, no reason to buy this because it will be of no help.
So it's really important that your partner have the training, not the person, obviously, who has the heart condition.
Yeah, this is where teamwork, and, you know, boating requires extraordinary teamwork. Everyone who does it knows, and there are usually jobs that one person on the crew does, like docking, someone else handles the lines and that sort of thing. But this device is one where you have to have total parity, total equality. If you buy an AED, you need to know how to operate it, as does your partner or your crew member. And both of you need to be as expert in its use as the other, because you never know who's really going to have the problem. And so both of you have to know how to use it. And if one of you is at more risk, then the other one has to be sure they know, because they're the ones that are likely to have to apply it. The other thing is, and I'll tell you a little anecdote that's a little bit morbid, but the other consideration as to whether or not to have your boat equipped with this is your overall health and philosophy. Now, if you've got something else going on, like, God forbid, terminal cancer, but you're still out enjoying your cruise, but your days are numbered, your doctor has told you they're numbered, and that if you were to have one of these fatal arrhythmias, you and your spouse have to say, have had a discussion about, well, would I rather die suddenly from this cardiac arrhythmia, or would I rather die over a more prolonged period of time with my cancer? These are personal decisions that only you and your spouse and doctor can sit and make. But my anecdote that I was going to tell you is back when we were in Birmingham, Alabama, there was a very, very talented cardiac surgeon, really a brilliant guy, brilliant with his hands, brilliant person. And every now and then you get shocked with the Bovie machine. And he looked up one day and he told everybody in the room, he says, you know, if I get shocked and I fibrillate, this one of these two rhythms that are lethal, he says, I don't want anybody to resuscitate me. And he said that because If you don't resuscitate someone who has one of these arrhythmias within 3 to 5 minutes, and if you're not successful, but let's say you are successful, but after that period of time, you could have brain damage, and then it's like having a major stroke and that sort of thing. So this brings up the point that if this rhythm occurs, you need to act fast, you need to do the right things, because if you don't, but late, you act slow but are kind of successful, you could end up with someone surviving but not being the person they were before, and that's not a desirable outcome.
Jerry, we're almost out of time, and I did promise our listeners you'd go into a little bit of information. What should somebody do while they're waiting for a rescue to come? Is there anything in particular that's critical after the defibrillation?
Yeah, I was for some reason thinking we had an hour, but it's 30 minutes.
We can go a little bit longer if we need to.
Here's what you do. If you and your doctor and the crew decide it's worth investing in, then you buy it. Then you get trained in it. And we talked about the people that ought to be buying it, the people who are at risk. And then you train the individuals, on each of you, how to do it. You apply these two electrodes, and then the machine does all the rest. That's why it's called automatic. It will determine whether or not this rhythm requires treatment, I mean shocking. If it does, it will do it. Now, what you should have done, your crew should have done before that, the first, if you're at port, or even if you're not at port, you got to quickly get out a Mayday. If you're at port, you call 911 and then immediately apply this, and you start CPR. Now, everybody on the boat anyone on a boat ought to take your Red Cross or American Heart Association CPR to know how to do that, because there are a number of conditions under which you need to apply that. But fundamentally, you pump, work on the chest, you put a fist on top of a wrist and go up and down at least 100 times a minute, pushing, depressing the sternum, the chest bone, 2 inches, let it up immediately, do that 100, 120 times a minute, and then you will breathe them, give them ventilation mouth to mouth a couple of times a minute. But in the meantime, also you got to be applying this thing. Let it diagnose the rhythm. If there's no shockable rhythm, then you can continue your CPR. You're okay. If it's a shockable rhythm, it'll tell you, get back. It will shock you. And then you will look, and it will tell you whether you've got a normal sinus rhythm or a light sustaining rhythm. If not, it'll shock again. But it will tell you what to do. But you are going to have to continue to maintain the patient's ventilation, meaning make sure they're breathing, and you're going to have to continue CPR if they don't have a rhythm that you can feel a palpable pulse. And we talked about that at the beginning. So if you're out alone, it's going to be really dicey. You get those distress calls out, but you've got to somehow drop the anchor. I think it's problematic if you have one of these events and you're underway. If you're at port, and people are at port more than they are underway, then you're okay. You can do all of this and get her survival, even if you're at anchor. But it becomes a real problem otherwise. But one thing I need to say here, you need to practice this. You need to go through dry runs. If you buy one, you need to make sure you can do it. It doesn't make any sense to buy it, put it somewhere, and not know how to operate it. So go through it, including calling the either the Coast Guard or 911, depending on where you are, and go through how you would do CPR. All of this is available through Red Cross. So, you know, it's a rare event. People who are at high risk, after they've talked to their doctors, probably be a good idea to invest in it. But the majority of people who are not at high risk, it's a nice thing to know about, mainly because if you're getting on an airplane or in a train station somewhere, you might be able to save somebody else's life.
Somebody else. I guess the point that we need to make is if you need one, you'll know that you need one. Your doctor will have already been in contact with you or have been in consultation with you, and you'll know that you need the device.
That's right. You don't just buy it because it's available. You buy it because of it's like everything else in medicine. There's an indication for it, and you and your doctor decide, and then if you both agree, and your crew agrees, then you purchase it, and then you practice it, and it's likely. Let me end on a very positive note.
Sure.
The first year they put it in the Chicago, they put these AEDs in the Chicago airport, there were 12 cardiac arrests, and 8 of them were saved by the quick, the patients survived by the quick use of the AEDs. That's an 80% survival in something that usually has about a 2 or 3% survival. So these things will save lives if they're used properly and used in a timely way.
Thank you very much. That was very, very informative, Jerry. For anyone who consults with their doctor and decides that they do need an AED, again, our sponsor, Chesapeake AED Services.com. at 410-238-2242 can help you. And Jerry, thank you so much. You've been so great, and we'll see you at the Spring Rendezvous. Jerry and Jenny will be giving a seminar on the ABCs of looping. It was done in October, and it was a huge success, so we look forward to that again. Jerry, stay well, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice.
Bye.
Bye-bye, y'all.
I guess we'll close off for now. Anyone visit our website. If you need help with anything, just let us know. The contact information is on the website. We'll see everybody next week. Thank you.